Good afternoon, everybody. I think we have enough for quorum. Comment from any KIPP SoCal site. We currently have the meeting available across our KIPP SoCal community. For those watching at a KIPP SoCal site, we do have interpreters online to provide Spanish-English translation. If you're at a site and need to listen to the meeting in a different language, check this with the school site personnel to make this change. The interpretation settings can be accessed by clicking the globe icon in your Zoom menu. We still need to utilize roll call voting for audio purposes after presentation of the item and any question and discussion. I will ask for a motion and a second. Board members, when you are making a motion, please state your name for the record. If we have those motions, I will turn it over to Belen to conduct the roll call vote. She will read off each board member's name, and we, as we approach a voting item, please make sure you are prepared to respond with either yes, no, or abstain. Okay. Are there any questions regarding the motion? Nope. Okay. As a reminder for board members and members of the public, KIPP SoCal board meetings are recorded. We post audio recordings of our meetings and share them with our authorizers. Here before you on the screen is an overview of today's agenda, which includes voting on consent items, a KIPP SoCal update, including presentations from two departments, a series of voting items, and we have a short closed session today. Also, as you may know, Angela is not here today. Belen will be standing in for her. Angela's finishing up some amazing preparation for her leadership. So, Belen, and I think Randy is.
Yes.
For the record, Randy Bishop is present.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Yes, for the record, Randy Bishop has arrived. Excited. Audio. Thank you, Randy. Sorry, I didn't mean for it to be. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. I can't believe it's already February of 2023, but exciting to see you all today. As Luis mentioned, and you'll notice that Angela is not here. She's wrapping up her Pajara session, but we're really excited for her. That was part of her own professional development. Our team members joining us today, we have the rest of our senior leadership team members who are here today. Of course, our wonderful in-house counsel, Cecily, Scotty, Roxy, who are part of our board staff. And then in addition, we also have a couple other team members joining us today. You'll get the chance to hear from two of them in a little bit. Alvaro Mendoza, who is our Community Engagement Associate from KIPP Empower Academy. Tony Ann Westby is a teacher at Baises, and we'll get to hear from her. And then Tiffany is also here joining us. So thank you all, and welcome to our speakers.
All right. Going on to public comment. Belen, do we have any members of the public?
So we don't have any members of the public here. I just want to check with the team to see if there's anyone on the line. If there's anyone at a school site that would like to provide public comment, please use the raise hand feature.
We don't have anybody physically present, but
we're checking if there's anyone at any of our school sites. Any last call for any public comment from any of our school sites? No public comment, please.
Okay. Let's move on to the next item, which is the consent agenda. Okay. As a reminder, we don't discuss the items on the consent agenda. If there are any items on the consent agenda that require clarification, we can remove them and discuss them prior to voting. Are there any, and I'm asking of the board members, are there any agenda items that the board members would like to remove from consent agenda and discuss? Okay. We have the items before you. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented?
Julie, second.
Randy, seconds. Okay. A roll call vote?
Yes. And also stating for the record that John Berg arrived. Naeem?
Aye.
John?
Yes.
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
That's everything.
Great. Motion passes. Okay. Moving on to KIPP SoCal updates and Belen.
Yeah. And George. Okay. So as we transition to in-person meetings, we're changing up how we do our KIPP SoCal updates and really wanting to maximize this time so you all can hear and engage with our team members. So we're really excited to have two presentations today. And so our first one will be from Kevika Amar, who is our Chief Academic Officer. Kevika comes to us, I forget how many years she's been with us, but comes to us with many years of experience, both in KIPP and outside of KIPP, as a wonderful teacher, school leader, and just someone who really loves and cares about students and their academic success. So Kevika, I'll turn it over to you. Do you want the clicker? Is that easier? Or do you want me to click?
Okay.
What's that?
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much. Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. I'm going to stand up because I'm a teacher, so I don't know how to connect. And in a couple minutes, you're about to hear from one of our strongest teachers in the region, Tony Ann. So I'm really excited for that. So I'll just sort of set the stage for that a little bit. So get out of your comfort zone because everyone's about to say it. First, I'm thinking question for everybody because I'm about to talk to you about the beautiful world, the exciting new initiative for KIPP SoCal of transitional kindergarten or pre-K, you might know it as. So first, just want to start, take a few minutes, take like 30 seconds, think about what was your favorite part of kindergarten, and if it's easier to think about your children's experience, that's great too, but what's something that's really memorable about your kindergarten experience? About 30 seconds to think about that. When you're ready, you're going to turn to the partner next to you and share your story. And I'm going to be looking for if you can share practice, and then we'll get to this. I
Thank you, Ms. Westby. I thought we'd try to get a little modeling of so much good interaction that happens with our students. One of the ways our teachers bring everyone back from robust conversations. Would love to hear from two or three folks on what you shared and your partners. What was the favorite or memorable part of kindergarten for you? Cecily.
Creativity being employed. I feel like, for me personally, it faded as I got older. It was more about memorizing and the routine, and it wasn't fun, and it wasn't always fun. And then, you know, everybody knows I have two very small children. My oldest is now in first grade, so I just watch her finish kindergarten, and then my youngest is in TK. And just seeing their creativity, even though they do have, this school is very rigorous, they have spelling tests every week, they have math tests every week, but the embrace of creativity every week, you know, and every day, actually, I see it, and it's priceless.
We will come back to that theme, so thank you for sharing.
Well, Randy and I couldn't remember our kindergarten days, so we had to focus on our kids. Randy, of course, was talking about his kids and learning math, words, all that fun stuff, music. And what I was sharing with Randy, at home, we only speak Spanish. So our first concern with our oldest one was, all right, how is she going to transition from only speaking Spanish to English? Obviously, it turned out to be great. But initially, as a parent, that was a major concern for us. Okay, are we doing something wrong? Because our focus at home was only to speak Spanish. Their English was watching TV, listening to music, but it turned out to be a great investment on our part.
Yeah, the other thing I'd add is just so much joy at that age. Mm-hmm. Right? They're so excited to be there. Kind of fades by middle school. I think.
Not when we do well, but I hear you. I hear creativity, play, but also learning, peer interactions, language acquisition, like honoring community, bilingualism, right? These are all like such important tenets of our current kindergarten programming. And now get to imagine doing that with kids a year younger, four-year-olds. In fact, randomly enough, today was the cutoff day for a student to turn five to be in our pre-K program. So as of today, we have no four-year-olds in our school, but yesterday we did. So that will make more sense as I start explaining. But basically, as you know, we've been running, you know, K-4 schools since 2008. But now we get to expand KIPP SoCal to be a TK-8 program fully. So I'm going to give you just a little bit of context before we also get to why we're talking about this today, some of the voting items that are coming. But just for a little bit of context, what we're really, really excited to expand our TK programming and embrace a lot more TK students into our schools. They will be in every single one of our elementary schools starting next fall, because we know research supports this very clearly, that the more years that we can spend with students, the better outcomes. So we're very excited to just add a year that we get to have with them. And just for a little context, so when, you know, as you remember, KIPP, first elementary school, Raices, that's when we started kindergarten. Amber, you know, founded that school. So first time in California, but actually even today, kindergarten and pre-K are not mandatory in the state of California. You know, students can't, like parents can choose to start sending their kids to school in first grade, which is just interesting. We, of course, have been offering kindergarten since 2008. And are now expanding completely to offer TK, and we'll talk more about what that means. You know, what's really changed right now is that California's never really provided guidance or requirements around how to run a TK program. That has changed with new legislation. So we are taking that opportunity to go ahead and use this moment to do our expansion. It's not LAUSD, for example, will also be doing this. We had an option, but because we know this is good for students, for student learning. We're moving in that direction as well. And so I want to just give you a little bit of sense of what has changed and what is going to be true. So a few things. I put up that there's new requirements coming from all this new legislation that from several bills that have passed in the last 2 years. One is that who is allowed to teach TK is changing. So our credentialing requirements are changing very significantly. That's something Michelle will talk to you about more in a few minutes. The age eligibility is changing pretty drastically. So as I just explained, yesterday we had four-year-olds. That means for the majority, like over 50% of the school year, our kids were actually four, not five. And that age is getting younger and younger and younger. And by the 25-26 school year, we actually have some students who will start school with us before their fourth birthday. So we will have some three-year-olds in our midst at that moment. So what you also hear from Tony Ann, Ms. Westby, in a few minutes too is, you know, we have for many years now been teaching mixed TK kindergarten classrooms. And in those, we traditionally have maybe somewhere between two and four TK students mixed in with the rest of our kindergartners. Honestly, they were much, much closer in age. And as California is changing that requirement of how old we need to be to enroll, we're going to see that gap in age change. We've already started to see the developmental differences. I mean, those of you who raise young children, you know the difference between a 3 3/4 age kid and a 5-year-old is pretty developmentally significant. And we feel very strongly now because of that developmental change, that shift that keeps happening, the mixed setting is no longer appropriate for us. We see the developmental needs changing gradually over these next couple of school years. So we're going to go ahead, we're embracing that change fully for next school year as we're seeing that happen. We are actually piloting a full TK classroom this year at Kipraisis with Ms. Westby. So she'll tell you a little bit more about that. And that has been in anticipation of us having some systems and structures to roll out across all of our elementary schools next year. The other, there's a few logistical things that I think just out of curiosity, just want to kind of keep you in the loop that it changes our class size. It's changing our staffing model a bit. You know, we've been working with Kyle and team to make sure that makes sense. There's desire and rumors that if not next year, maybe the year after, the governor will fund in such a way that the class size will get even smaller. Right now, it's a max of 24 with a 12-to-1 student teacher ratio. So we'd have two adults in the room. That's what we're doing right now at Raisis. Ms. Westby's aide is covering her class right now, so she can be here with us for an hour. And then we might get even smaller, but that's kind of TBD. Let me just pause there and check on logistical questions you might have about the why and the how. And then we've got exciting special guests presenting, which are much more interesting than me.
Let me ask a question on the how. How are families in the community being informed that this is an option?
Yeah, excellent question. We've been meeting with all of our schools over the course of the last few weeks to set their enrollment targets so that every school has at least the 24 spots open. In a couple of cases, we may actually open two classrooms. And so that's actually going into our lottery numbers that are set in mid-February before the lotteries. But we've already, our recruitment team, I don't know if you want to jump in, but our student recruitment team has already started advertising this. And reminder, we've always had a few TK students in the mix. I think the big thing that is not very well publicized right now, not just by us, but in general, is for families to understand that the cutoff age is lower now. And so I think that there's still some work to do there. But in our normal kindergarten recruitment efforts, we have already added all of the language around we're also enrolling four-year-olds into TK.
Just logistics. Do we have the class space for all of this?
Let me talk to you about some of the challenges. So obviously, you know, these are just like great opportunities for us to stay with our kids longer. We're really, really excited about what our academic programming can build over time with this. But I just want to be real, like we have some very deep challenges. Facilities is a huge one. Which is why we're in some schools, we've been able to repurpose a space. Sometimes it's something like a teacher workroom space. Sometimes it's an art or music teacher now moving from classroom to classroom. But this has been one of our biggest challenges, and we know it's going to be a long-term challenge as well. We've kind of piecemealed a way to get everyone at least one classroom for next year. But we think there's opportunity here to have, you know, something like the four homeroom model that we currently have at our rest of our grades if we had the space. And I actually think it's something we have to very seriously consider because, you know, as our enrollment across LA and California is declining, I mean, this is an opportunity for us to make sure that we're enrolling kids with the same enrollment patterns that others will be doing. And this is going to end up potentially being a limiting factor for us. And it's something that, you know, Kyle and I have talked about a lot. We're still working through what possible future solutions might look like. But we have figured out a way for everyone to start with one cohort, at least. Yeah.
I had a question about enrollment. So how does this mitigate?
Well, right now, it's students that we are not going to be able to get in kindergarten level if they start a TK somewhere else. We've been asking families to switch schools.
Got it.
So we're hoping to kind of solve a little bit of that by offering our own TK program. We on average, have been accepting 12 TK students per school for the last couple of years. So we're hoping to be able to find, you know, we're doubling that for now. And then if we can figure out the space issue and the teacher credentialing issue, which you'll hear more about, ideally we keep going. And in all honesty, like academic programming for this is very new for us too. I think we've been able to kind of get away with kids who are almost five and with our kindergarten programming. But even as all of you reflected, so much of it is about the combination of play and learning. And, we don't want our TK experience with four-year-olds or three-year-olds, to feel like sit in your class in straight rows. We're learning, you know, you must be able to master this math content today. Like we want it to feel more creative play, discovery. Yes, we will have nap time. You know, like these are things that are not normally like a part of our model for our older kids at this moment. So it is very different for us. And we all really want to embrace that, you know, there are developmental differences in the learning and that a more play-based approach is going to be more appropriate for us. And that's a lot of what Tony Ann's been sort of piloting and playing and pioneering with this year so that we can document and, help others get off to a strong start. But honestly, this will be a huge area of growth and development for us academically over the next 3 years as well. Okay. What I really thought would be fun is to give you a little insight into how TK is going so far, since we're going to be expanding this out. So in a moment, I'm going to pass it over to Ms. Westby, and she's going to kind of walk you through a day in the life. I've gotten a chance to spend quite a bit of time in the classroom, and if any of you have time to drop by Raisis and you just need like a dose of joy, highly, highly recommend. You're always welcome. So before I pass it off to Tony Ann, just for a little context, Tony Ann's been a teacher for the last 15 years. She started out as a preschool teacher, but has been with us at KIPP Raisis for the last 12 years. She's taught second grade, a lot of kindergarten, a lot of TK kindergarten combo. And as I mentioned, she is now currently in the entire KIPP SoCal region. She's I have only TK students in my classroom right now, teacher. And in addition to pioneering that for us, she's enrolled in a credentialing and master's program for pre-K education. She is also helping us document the best practices around curriculum and structure that we're learning from her class so that we can spread that to our other schools for next year. So it has just really been a huge asset. Please come visit her. But in case you don't get to do that, and since most of you haven't gotten to do that yet, we have a few little surprises for you so you can get a sense of what this is going to look and feel like as we expand it out to 100% of our elementary school. So Tony, I'm going to pass it off to you. And well, and I might need help with this video when you're ready for us to hit play.
All right. So I'll just pass it to some of the things we do in TK. You can just pass it around. And then I'm actually just going to talk over the video, and then there's some times where you'll have some of the kids interact, and we'll just watch as they show us their amazingness. So, yes. So this is our transitional kindergarten. A lot of people don't even know what TK means, but it's transitional kindergarten, and it's basically giving kids an introduction to kindergarten. We all know that development is so strong and high at 0 to 5. They're just taking all of that information in. So it definitely is a really great place to start their education. So, of course, building relationship is definitely one of the strong things that we look at KIPP. And just like in TK, we all have a strong relationship with the kiddos. We start our day with a mystery question. And again, we're learning through play. So they're looking, they're finding their name. So they're knowing the letters in their name. All the things that we are expecting them to do, but not necessarily on like you have to learn it by this day. So they're finding their name. It's very, very enriched with vocabulary. So you've seen a couple of the kids like, I have buttons. Do you have buttons? Do these count as buttons? And then definitely like learning from each other. So right now I'm gonna say the teacher is the guide, but the students definitely learn from each other. The interaction between each other are really, really authentic. One of the sayings with the curriculum is talking is thinking. So a lot of the times the students are thinking out loud and that's where they're learning from. So they're like, oh, I know this answer. It's overcast outside. And we're like, what, overcast? And they're like, what does that mean, Rio? And he's like, oh, well, it means, you know, the clouds are there and it's not bright. So now all the students are using the word overcast when it's cloudy outside. So they're learning from each other and they're definitely using this idea of I can be the leader and I can help my students, my peers learn also. So we do have indoor recess. Our indoor recess or our outdoor recess is basically a time for them to be really creative. This is their open free time. I want to do this. A lot of times they're creating, like you said, this is the time with the things we remember, right? Like, oh, I love recess when I was in school. And this is time for them to just get to know each other, learn from each other. Before this was our morning work. Morning work is just to activate their brain. It's usually a guided practice. A concept that the teacher is doing and like, oh, it might be addition, it might be subtraction, walking through it with the teacher. So it's modeling really like how we're getting through those core curriculum, because we do feel because they're so young and they're taking in all the information, the rigor should be high enough for them to like hold on to some of it so that they can implement it in their everyday life. So right here is our morning opening. We do opening circle in English and in Spanish. In our uses, a lot of our kids come in who don't know English yet. And I think this is basically to help our students feel very heard and motivated to actually like communicate with us. So as far as like, oh, what goes in on the purple row? They're like, ¿cómo se dice purple? And then, oh, morado. So you hear them interact with each other so that both of them can feel successful. And that's pretty much, I'm going to say, the biggest thing is for them to feel comfortable with who they are and building up what they want to do. So this is our modeling is how to make a plan. We do a lot of pretend play. So we're going to, I think it says we're going to have a great day. And we talk about how we're going to have a great day. We model how we write. And basically they're like, okay, how am I going to write? We write so that we can remember what we want to tell our audience. So share the news is a time where the students really get to talk to each other and interact with each other. So they find a partner. They find a different partner every day. I think this is another, like, because it's embedded into the curriculum, they don't have any, you can't say, oh, I have a best friend. They go to different people. They go to whoever they're talking to, whoever's close to them, and they feel comfortable really engaging with each other. And it just gets them to talk. And the question might be, how do we set the table? What do you need when you go to a fancy restaurant? Those are things that are like, oh, I went to a quinceañera, and I'm like, yes, what is, oh, they have flowers on the table. Oh, yeah, I seen flowers at this fancy restaurant, and it had this beautiful gold tablecloth. And those are like the type of conversations that they're engaging in, and they just turn. I literally just had a friend turn 5 months over the weekend. So again, of course, it wouldn't be KIPP if we didn't expect our kids to like get something from it, right? So we're still involving, we're still giving them access to reading and writing, just not on their own level. We know that children develop at different areas, and it's not expecting them to meet those milestones at a certain time. It's letting them hit it when they can do it. So here is a picture of our play plans. Basically, a play plan is making a plan for what you're going to play. So they have in writing embedded, they have their drawing, and he's going to start talking in a second. Actually, I think we missed it. I think we missed it. I don't know if you can like do it like 10 seconds. Yeah. So he made the lines. He said what he was going to do. He made sure that he had one-to-one with the lines on the paper. He went back, checked the paper to make sure he had the right correct amount of lines. And then he decided, I'm going to go to the kitchen, but I'm also going to play this role. And then they have the problem in solving. There's going to be a problem when life happens. So they're definitely becoming self-regulated and how to interact with each other. This is Kezia. This is our pretend play. This is what our creative play looks like. We have a theme. And Kezia is the mom, and she has two boys that are very, very crazy, and they want ice cream. So she's giving them ice cream, and this is them interacting with Olivia. She just counted with one-to-one. She said, how much money do I owe you? $25. She counted it out.
Sorry. You want me to play top the sound off?
Real life experience. My brother has his ice cream and I want his. So definitely learning through those situations, becoming different parts. They're learning who, like, I'm going to be the cashier. I'm going to be the customer. And using the same type of vocabulary definitely has been amazing. They're invested in their play. So they can sit and play whichever station they're at for about 30 minutes. They choose what the problem is going to be, and it just comes authentically. I also think this is amazing because, like, we're not telling them what to think. We're telling them how to think and how to live their life as great human beings. So just giving them the experiences that, like, I'm watching my parent, but if I do it, how is it going to react or how is it going to affect me? So, this is a day with TK. We do a lot of group work. There is differentiated instruction, so it might be them working on something independently, and the teacher or the aide definitely getting targeted instruction for what where they're at. So yeah, that's TK.
Wow.
Stay there for a minute, so so thank you, first of all, for giving us a look into your classroom. You can see why I'm telling you it can be really fun.
So, you know, just again, for a little context, as California decides to fund, you know, pre-K in a different way and make it possible for us, I want to make sure, you know, we're answering any questions about why we are choosing to opt into that. So I wanted to give a chance to ask Ms. Westby any questions that you might have. And Penny, I'm hoping you could start with just actually telling us a little bit. You've only had the kids for a semester so far, half the year in, almost exactly. And you've had a lot of experience teaching the TKK combo. I'm curious what impact you're seeing of having the kids in their own TK classroom just in the first half of the year. And then anyone on the board who'd like to ask some follow-up questions, please do.
The biggest difference that I see are the kids are more vocal and they're able to say what their problem is. And a lot of times I'm saying, can you please use your words? And they're able to identify their problem. They're able to self-regulate themselves and say, you know what? I just need some time. Can I sit at my chair? And those are, like, I want to say, usually before in the combo class, they would just kind of, like, go to themselves and just try to, I want to say, I'm just going to wait until I can figure it out on my own. But now it's, like, they're more vocal. They do tell us what they need, and they're able to identify what they want. So I don't have any priors, so they come into school happy. I can't say that right now about our kindergartners because like they haven't learned how to get that self-regulation. Mommy's gonna pick me up in a little while. So I definitely seeing them being more vocal and like more transparent of like, this is where I'm at and this is, I need some space.
Just one connection, please, what you were sharing in your first reflection about your kids' experience. One of the things that we've had also is, you know, last board meeting, we shared some of our academic data. We pointed out that our English language learners is an area where we need to put more focus. One thing that's interesting, almost half of Tonya's class are students who are English language learners and are learning English for the first time. And the growth that we're seeing there because of this ability to get to be more vocal is so different than, I mean, we'll see how, you know, I have predictions of how it will play out over the next couple of years, but we're already real time seeing that impact. Other questions for Ms. Westby?
Ms. Westby, I have a question. I noticed that, well, you mentioned that some of the kids will help each other in if the kid doesn't speak English and chat. Do you see that very often?
Yes. So the little boy who was building the tower, he was actually, they're building a bridge and they were trying to come up with a way to like have it safe for passengers to pass by. And his friend Turner, the one that was playing with him on the magnet tiles, he was like, the word was ramp, like you need a ramp. And he was like, that's called a ramp. And he said, but we have to make it big enough for the cars to pass through. So a lot of times, because we do a lot of like repeat after me, like they'll just say ramp. And he was like, como se dice? And he's like, ramp, that's a ramp. That's my thing too. How do I say that? That's pretty much a lot of like call and response, a lot of music, and they just get really involved in it. So even my English only speakers are very advanced in Spanish in like days of the week, months of the year, all of the shapes, the colors, all of those things, they can do in both English and in Spanish. So definitely the Spanish teacher is on board. Yes.
The experience of some of the younger kids that are presumably going to be in this program for a few years.
What's that like? So my youngest child was Nathan. He was the last one to turn 5. And I do see he has I'm still growing, but I can do all the rigor parts of our curriculum. And I think what he really needed was the time to like, I need to learn how to do this. I need to learn how to interact with my friends. You know, they're still in that egocentric stage where it's like, I want it, I'm going to play it. And then this is really like showing him like this, I need to take my time. I need to take turns. I need to vocalize that this is what I want rather than just taking it. He is pretty, I want to say the biggest like success because he is able to say, I can't stand in line at the front in the line. So I need to go back to my space because it's their turn. So learning those little rules in life are what I'm seeing drive those younger students.
Will they follow the same schedule as their students? And are you going to use specific curriculum?
So the curriculum that we're implementing right now is called Tools of the Mind, and it's actually geared for 3 to 4 year olds. We have like different developmental milestones that we want them to hit, and that's just like that's supposed to be in their trajectory to hit kindergarten. So those things we are taking into consideration. We don't really directly instruct like you're going to learn your letters and sounds. We're going to do this. We learn through play. So a lot of times, like when I was doing the lines, I might say, the word is store. What sound do you hear in store? And they're like Sophia, the S. So they're telling me the information, but it's not necessarily given to them or like mandatory for, you know, that's the S. We're going to start with the S. Tools of the Mind is definitely, it comes authentically. And we follow the same schedule right now. The biggest difference is they do have a nap time. Their specials are a little bit shorter because of attention span. But to be honest with you, they are, I'm going to say, really successful with all the teachers that they go to.
I'll just add for, so one of the things we're using, you know, this classroom as a space to try some things out. That's why I wanted to try some curriculums out before when we went more widespread. People probably keep tweaking for the next couple of years. Like that's not set in stone, but we had some good success. And that's part of what Joanne's helping us, you know, share out with others. There are California TK standards, but the approach that, as you hopefully saw from the student samples coming around, you know, the approach that we're taking in Ms. Wesley's classroom that she's really been the architect of is, I think, hopefully you can see in the student samples, like it is paying off. Like they've already actually hit most of the TK standard milestones, almost about half a year to go. So we're really excited about what this means for them in the coming years as well. Well, I have time for another question, or should we?
Yeah, we have time for one more question.
If there is one.
One more, sorry. Not less, but you talked about milestones. Are the milestones set by the state, or is it a combination of KIPP and the state?
I'm going to say we have ECE, early contemptancies, and it's basically, I'm going to say there's a 48-month and a 60-month follow-up, and that's where we're really taking all of the what students should be able to do.
So they are set by the state. And in previous years, we've actually just put the TKers into kindergarten milestones, which is why we've seen, you know, some variance and some students end up doing, you know, doing it second year, some students are able to accelerate and go straight to first grade. There's like, you know, there's a lot of variance there. But there are state milestones. I will just say that it's interesting because, you know, as you all know, SoCal was very much about academic rigor. And it's been interesting to like back off of that just a little bit to make sure that there isn't more play and creative learning time. And yet we're actually at the exceeding pace on the milestones. I think that has provided us some good early evidence that that approach was a good one.
Is that the same as the stages question?
Okay, so Tonya, thank you so much for taking time to me. And
I'm
going to transition to
Michelle.
You got it?
I got it. Great. Okay, thank you. Thank you both, Kavitha. Thank you, Tonya, so much for sharing with us. So our next topic, so of course, as we heard all this amazing piece and all the work that happens in TK, one of the challenges that Kavitha referenced was the credential piece. And so in order for us to, you know, have amazing teachers such as Ms. Wesley, there's a credentialing process that we need to go through, which will require a vote. So I'm going to turn it over to Michelle, who's going to share the proposed transitional kindergarten credential policy. You want the that, or you want me to just put for you?
Yeah, thank you. All right, good afternoon, everybody. We have teaching credentials for every teacher at our schools. In line with the Commission for Teacher Credential in California, as the state prepares to roll out TK more broadly, they have created guidelines to help each entity comply with this, with the new requirements for teaching transitional program students. There are some things that are dictated by the policy from the state, and there are some things that we may at the discretion of the entity. And so what I'm going to focus on today is sharing with you the three key pillars of the policy that are in our understanding to be compliant with the open intent and the letter of the guidelines from the state that we've received over the last 6 months or a year. So the three big pieces are what experience with TK students is equivalent to 24 units of early childhood education classwork. The second piece is teaching special education to students with IEPs. And the third piece is the procedures that will follow in order to document education or equivalent experience and making sure that our teachers are correctly assigned for a TK classroom. So in this slide, I have some information just on that first piece of comparable experience. In order to teach TK, teachers need to have 24 units of education in early childhood or equivalent experience. And that or part of my sentence is what would have some discretion. Our policy, as I've drafted it with a team and presenting it here to you today, is that we consider 3 years of teaching students in preschool age students to be equivalent to the 24 units of education. We consider both experience at KIPP SoCal as well as experience in a preschool setting outside of KIPP SoCal or in another TK classroom outside of KIPP SoCal. Next slide, please. The second piece of this triad here is what type of credentials our SPED educators are going to have. We intend to be fully compliant here as well, as is our culture. And our special education teachers will need to have early childhood special education authorization that became expanded and available beginning July 1st of last year. And we'll make sure that everyone that we have with our students complies with that. Next slide, please. Lastly, we will document our review of our teachers' credentials as an extension of what we do now, where we review transcripts from their school, we review verifications of employment, both internal to KIPP and external. And while our credentialing department takes the lead on that, with regards to SPED services, we'll collaborate with our SPED student services team to make sure our SPED teachers are compliant there. We create a form for each individual, and that form stays on their record, documenting all the documents that were reviewed and presented as evidence documentation that the person is indeed ready and prepared for this challenge. Any questions about any of those three pillars of the policy? Okay. So then in the next slide, I have here, as you saw in your agenda, a motion to adopt this new transitional kindergarten credentialing policy to go into effect next year in preparation for our students showing up in our classes August 1st.
Thank you, Michelle. All right. Any questions from anybody? Do we have a motion to adopt KIPP SoCal Public Schools' new transitional kindergarten credentialing policy, which will go in effect July 1st, 2023.
This is Heather.
Heather first, or second?
Second.
Carlos, second. Helen?
Ryan?
Yes.
Jack?
John?
Yes.
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
That's everything.
Yeah, motion passes. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Okay. Joanna?
So, Joanna, you want to?
I'll take a quick.
So, Joanna's going to give our next talk around our advocacy and community engagement at KIPP SoCal. Joanna joined us not even 2 years ago. I don't remember.
July 2021.
Okay, great. But as our Chief External Impact Officer, and has just been such a great addition to our team and to our region. And I'm really excited for her to share more about all the efforts that her and her team have made with regards to advocacy and community engagement. So.
Okay, well, I'm excited to present today. The two pictures over here are some of our schools out at the most recent MLK Day parade in South LA. So we'll share more about some of the things that are bringing us out into the community. But we're going to start. So I'm also a former teacher, and I used to be in elementary school. So I love a post-it and handwriting things. I was talking about this with some of you earlier. So we're just going to imagine for a minute. So everyone has a post-it on their by their name tag. And what you're going to do is you're going to pretend you are, you know, you have the opportunity to talk to someone in that role. So for example, I think Kyle, you have LAUSD co-located teacher. So if Kyle were to go to Gascon, or I guess it's not LAUSD, if he were to go to Generations and talk to one of our co-located LAUSD teachers who works on the same campus with KIPP Generations, what would he ideally want them to say about KIPP? What would like the dream response from that person when you say, how do you feel about KIPP? What do you think about KIPP SoCal? What would the ideal response be? Okay, so imagine you're talking to whomever is on that post-it, and talk to your neighbor about what you would love for that person to say if asked. What do you think about KIPP SoCal? Okay, got it. Okay, good one.
I just hope they hear the charters of schools. So if you're
teaching charters, that schools are there, you're doing very well.
So I know we had a couple groups of three, so I want to give them a little extra time. But did anyone hear anything powerful from their neighbor that they would like to share with the whole group? I'm really good at cold calling. There are any volunteers.
my neighbor, hostess talks about neighbors who live by a KIPP school. And in our team, there was a commentary about partnership with the neighborhood, that there's a drum program that starts at 8 o'clock. And it's great that the kids are involved in music. But there's cooperation with the neighbors. And the neighbors said, we are so in support of that. But is there any way we'd be in even greater support if you started at 9?
Love it. Love it. And that's the kind of, you know, commentary we want to hear from our neighbors, instead of, you know, what we sometimes see in August, September, where you're getting neighbors who are really upset about traffic patterns changing overnight. Now the kids are back in school. That would be a more ideal conversation. How about someone from this side? Something your neighbor shared. Heather, what did you guys talk about?
This is the mayor of Huntington Park, and we talked about the role of schools in the community, and just how happy they are being there to have these
kids. So this might seem like, you know, just kind of a fanciful exercise, but literally right before our meeting started, I got a text on our leadership team chain with one of our advocacy and community engagement teammates who was out with the former mayor, now councilman, Al Rios in Southgate. He was rocking his KIPP sweatshirt and saying, like, I wear this all the time. I'm really proud. Separately, Kavika told me the city of Huntington Park decided to shut off water earlier this week without letting us know. So now we need to go find that mayor and just be like, in the future, we prefer if you do this after school or give us a heads up. So these are, we try to put ourselves in the external work in the mind frame of all of the different stakeholders that you guys just pretended to interact with, whether it's someone who's anti-charter, someone who's an elected official, someone who is a co-located principal on a campus that's sharing with KIPP. To, you know, we want to make sure we're representing who we are and our values everywhere we go in the community. And so my goal today is that all of you will be able to explain our approach to advocacy and the goals we've set for this year, the progress we've made, the challenges we face, and ways that you can get involved in support, and obviously give time to ask questions and make connections with any ideas you might have. Let's see. Mel, can you read our why, please? Is there a mission?
Sure. Together with families and communities, we create joyful, academically excellent schools that prepare students with the skills and confidence to pursue the paths they choose, college, career, beyond, so they can lead fulfilling lives and create a more just world.
So, I mean, our very KIPP mission, which is the same across the country, starts out with together with families and communities. And that is part of why the work of our team is so important, because we know that we are not going to prepare our kids in the way we would hope if we don't truly partner with their families and our larger communities. You can see pictures. This is Senator Stephen Bradford visiting KIPP Generations recently. We had Chef Keith Corbin of Alta Adams come hang out with our kids in Watts, where he is originally from. Our ribbon cutting at, I think it's Comienza, yeah. And one of our vaccine clinics. So those are just some of the many ways we've been engaging. And I think something that I always try to ground myself in, especially as someone who's coming from the more academic and school management side, is our kids are still facing a ton of challenges, even in a state like California that has so many resources. As a state, we're still ranked very, very low in math and reading achievement, despite the wealth that exists in our state, and a lot of discrepancies based on race and income. And in addition to that, we're facing the third highest teacher shortage in the country. And we know this is a national crisis. And again, California is facing the third worst teacher shortage. So these are all reasons why we feel it's really essential for us to devote time and resources to community engagement and advocacy. So when when I got here, we decided that we were going to set some clear goals and an advocacy agenda. A lot of the work our team does is, you know, can be reactive. We have this crisis in this community. We have something happening over here. But we also wanted to articulate a really clear strategy and approach. And so our hope is to build relationships, build friends with a lot of leaders across the state, whether that's elected officials or community leaders, and make sure that Angela and our her counterpart in Northern California, Charisse, are seen as partners in the education landscape in California. And many times in California, charters have kind of, you know, not always had a seat at the table in the state agenda. And this year, we've really been focused on building friends and defining how we work collaboratively with our counterparts in KIPP NorCal to achieve our advocacy goals. So I'm going to walk through some of the goals we've set this year and how we're doing on them and some of the wins we've had, and then I'll share a few challenges. So I'll give everyone a second to read these goals, and I'll talk about some victories we've had. So one thing we wanted to do was develop this shared California advocacy strategy, and we also actually extended it to include Aspire, which I think is the largest charter network across NorCal, and so I think Stephanie's giving me positive reinforcement, so this is good, fact check. So we've been meeting quarterly with KIPP NorCal and Aspire, and we've been working together to develop advocacy goals, to partner on legislators. That's just one example. NorCal is meeting with the Black Caucus of the State Assembly on the 22nd of February. So we're going to talk in advance about any shared goals we really want them to convey in the same way that they speak to us when we're talking to legislators in the state. We're planning a shared lobby day in March to go to Sacramento and talk to some of our legislators. And we're really, really focused on this educator talent crisis and building awareness on it so that we can ensure that there are policies and financial resources devoted to tackling this challenge. Another thing, and this is feedback I think, you know, some of you have been involved with as well, but part of what we heard after years of rapid growth at KIPP SoCal is that we really wanted to make sure that we set up a structure to evaluate our readiness to grow, to do mergers, to take on, you know, increased communities, or different communities, new communities, and really ground that in our mission about working collaboratively with families and communities. So we've developed a process, which Andrew and my team has really taken the lead on, where all the different teams across KIPP SoCal who are involved in any of the functions that would support growth or new schools take the time to rate our readiness on a variety of metrics. This includes the opportunity to do things like demographic studies, to do interviews and focus groups in communities that might be potential partners, to really make sure that there's both a desire and a need in the community for a KIPP school, and to make sure that we are internally prepared to do future growth. Okay, another big thing is we have completely restructured our ACE team, our advocacy and community engagement team, and we are finally fully hired, which is a milestone we only achieved a few months ago. So something that, you know, we constantly encountered on the advocacy team was there would be a crisis in a particular community or area, and everyone would kind of go and support that effort or that initiative. And while that was really helpful, it eliminated the opportunity for us to build those proactive relationships. And we wanted to get away from the, we show up when there's a problem, we show up when we need something, and move more to, we show up so much that you get sick of us showing up and you decide to like call us and engage with us proactively. And we get to, you know, we solve problems before they happen. So this team is divided. We have four people led by a director, and they each have a certain number of schools in a particular region assigned to them. And the expectation is they are out at community engagement events several times a month. They are bringing community members into the school several times a month. And we've also tried to be really focused. So you all know that we've had with our, you know, our land that we purchased in Cudahy, we found ourselves getting wrapped up into questions about environmental justice. And we've really been trying to show that we are actually super supportive of environmental justice efforts. One of our teammates was actually in the news recently at an event in Watts where we're partnering with school district advocates in LAUSD, as well as community groups, to really push on some of the environmental issues that our schools collectively in Watts are facing with some of the lead poisoning and other things that have been happening. Okay, building friends. So we consistently meet with legislators or staff. These are just four of the legislators that we've either met with this year or will be meeting with soon. And that's been really helpful, both for when we're facing like an unanticipated challenge, but also when there's something that we are helping to lobby for and support. We actually had Assemblymember Mike Gibson, who's in the lower right corner. His office reached out to us last year and asked for a letter of support with an initiative they were pulling. And that to me was a great sign that they're now also coming to us and saying, like, we want KIPP to go on the record supporting the work that we're doing. And that's a place we hope to get with, you know, all of the legislators with whom we work. We also have been bringing them to our kids, and our kids in Gardena found out from Senator Bradford. They were very disappointed to learn that although he had procured $60 million for one of the local hospitals, he didn't get to keep any of that money. And he had to explain to them, they were like, you don't even get a million of it, not even 2 million. He's like, that would be illegal. I'm not allowed to do that. And we had a really good conversation about being an elected official and what the rules are there. Another big piece we've been working on is better ways to consistently showcase who we are and why we exist. So we are working actually with a new communications firm for earned media. Ed Week is speaking to one of our principals, like right now as we speak. We were able to obtain an LA Times article, which was a really, you know, large piece that had a ton of traffic on the website. And this is, you know, I believe very much in quantitative metrics, but I also love those little like anecdotes and interactions that let you know you're on track. So in this, just this last week, I had two different kids at two of our different schools tell me, I saw KIPP on the news, or I saw you on the news. And one was this, you know, environmental activism place where people were wearing their KIPP SoCal shirts. Another place was our school in Watts, the community service day for MLK, and they were featured on the news. So just people seeing us and KIPP becoming more visible out in the community is a really big part of our work.
Please. So yeah, I saw that KCAL covered it. It was great press. How do we build off that? I mean, now that there's, you know, like some good association with us, how do we expand that into not just that one incident, but just all the great work we're doing in all the schools?
That is a great question. My secret goal was to make Howard Bloom my bestie throughout the process of this article. I don't know that he would call me his bestie yet, but I'm working on it. He did. One thing I shared with him is I said, you know, we are happy to provide background or insight on any articles you do. And he actually reached out to us, and we were mentioned in an article a few weeks ago about coming back from COVID. And there was a group of LAUSD parents who were asking for stricter procedures and more masking. And he was like, but KIPP actually is following the county guidelines. And I didn't even realize it was going to be this like, well, LAUSD parents are upset, but, you know, KIPP is using this more strict policy. But he quoted us, he cited our policy in our schools. And so I think one thing is just developing more proactive relationships with reporters and showing them that we're people who can be called upon and relied upon. Our new firm, communications firm that we're working with, is setting up a list of reporters to whom they're going to introduce Angela, myself, others, so that we can get more interaction. And then other ways that we're hoping to like continue this presence, two things. We're putting out a monthly, we have a new communications person, and she's putting out a monthly pitch blurb, which has gotten us press the last couple months. So basically, she creates stories and blogs about great things going on at KIPP SoCal, sends it out to all of our contacts, and then that enables people to come in and find stories that are really unique to our schools. And then the last thing is we're trying to make sure for every advocacy event we do, we're also paying attention to media and how we could interact with the media in a way that's productive to our cause. So for example, we're planning a salon right now to educate the public on the teacher workforce challenges. And while we were unable to secure Quinta Brunson, who I thought would be like the perfect facilitator from Abbott Elementary for this panel, her PR team did respond to us and engage with us. And they said, you know, reach back out to us if you have other opportunities. Maxine Waters' team is looking at it today and is excited about it as the state superintendent of public instruction. So in situations like this, if we can even get one or two kind of bigger names in the door, it can help us draw media attention to something that is something we believe the public should be paying attention to. So hopefully that answers your question. All right, so take a second, turn and talk to people next to you. What are your reflections and takeaways so far? What questions do you have? And then we'll share some challenges and take, you know, other questions that you all have. But curious, giving, I talked a lot, so I want to give everyone time to process and share what your reflections and takeaways are.
I also calibrate lots of tasks, so that also that helps, so that I have time to do it.
All right, Naeem, can you share something you guys discussed?
Yeah, Kyle was just telling me that a lot of this publicity we're gaining is actually helping us on the real estate side as well, in terms of, you know, being better suited to take over facilities or utilize the facilities on the real estate side.
My like secret goal in life is have Kyle tell me that, you know, build magic things are happening with our buildings thanks to our advocacy efforts. So we're not there yet, but one day that's my hope. That's my hope. I'm sure it's Kyle's hope too. how about Cecily?
I just share with them a piece of information that I gathered from Mitch, our head of security, who's monitoring the area. And I was thinking this could be a great follow-up story, which I'm sure you're already probably working on, but that is actually not just that the motel is gone, the activity, because it can just move a couple blocks, but the actual activity, and I'm sure you can speak on that even more being there, has actually changed. That he's visibly, you know, he tells me the truth, he would say, but he's very, you know, real like me. And he's like, I almost cried because just seeing it day after day after day, seeing all these activities, I was like, I was just pointing, you know, telling them I want to go. I haven't been, because what I remember is, you know, the last interactions that I actually watched happen right in front of our school. So it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I think that could be another great follow-up story that, look, it's actually made a big, big impact in the area.
Thank you for that. And totally agree. And to EJ's earlier question, we actually, a couple weeks after the LA Times story, there was another news media piece that came out because Locke High School, one of the big high schools in South LA, actually saw our protests, saw the article, saw the motel, and they protested in front of our schools and up and down Figueroa because they shared that, you know, their school is facing a lot of the same things and they were inspired by what they saw the KIPP team do. And I reached out to them and said, like, thank you so much. And like, we'd love to work together in the future. So they were like, let's plan something for the spring. So I think, again, like the more this great work is happening and just like getting it out there helps a ton externally, but it also makes a big impact. And I'm sure Mr. Mendoza is going to share some.
You just more chills because that's where it all started.
Yeah.
My son went to, well, not lost something, but he went to Green Dot. It's a Green Dot charter school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was one of the first parents who started the whole United Parents, United Students there. So that's awesome.
And to get LAPD to actually, they actually have come in to clean it up is miraculous.
And they actually, now the senior lead officer, I send out some like monthly updates on what we're doing with the motel space. He always writes back and says, let us know what you need. Let us know how we can help, which is a 180 from our initial conversations with the 77th precinct / me banging on the door and be like, can someone let me into this building so I can talk to someone? So progress. Some of the challenges we're facing, I'm sure people have seen the headlines about some of the shifts in the school board. We, you know, now have a president and vice president whose record has been historically, whose voting record has historically not supported charters. And we really have to do more work, honestly, to strengthen our relationships with the board members. So we've recently reached out to all of them, asked to meet. I'll be going in person to the LAUSD board meeting next week just to remind people who haven't responded yet. We're here. We'd love to meet with you. We're excited to build a relationship. And just generally, and I was just talking about this a little with John, but just trying to figure out ways to build connections with more stakeholders who can help bring attention to the work that we do and spread what's working. And now I'm excited to introduce a special guest, Mr. Mendoza, who's going to share with us a little bit about his work that he does. He does community engagement and advocacy at KIPP Empower Academy, and without him, we would not have achieved the win of getting the motel taken down. This is him just this week with Spencer Paisinger, who's been one of our supporters and came and talked to our kids about his career both in the NFL and as a writer on All-American. And I'm going to turn it over to you to share a few minutes of your work.
Thank you. So as I was mentioning, when I see this type of setting, it reminds me back from when I was my children in Head Start. And I was the president of the board members there. And it's just bringing me so much memories of how much I've grown, how much I've developed throughout the years. I'm a volunteer. And what John just shared about Green Dot is it's amazing because the way that I'm processing the advocacy efforts is meeting with parents one-on-one over coffee, letting them know, hey, you know, this is what your potential is for the community, letting know that your voice matters a lot, especially within this community. Look what we just did over the motel. That couldn't have been done without your advocacy worker efforts, without your support. And it was a challenge because the LAPD was one of the most interesting ones I had, where I actually went to the station itself, met with the captain. He was very resistant in the beginning. I don't know for what reasons, but I came with solidarity and I said, I'm here to seek your support and how we could arrange some sort of partnership. That's all. That all it took. Where he brought his senior lead officer, which was Mr. Cardenas, which in fact was I had an interaction with him earlier, where I was taking pictures of some activity going on in the motel, and he started shaking his head, and he's like, and I went and approached him, and I said, "Don't worry, I'm just taking pictures of what's going on." And his comment I didn't really like, because he said, "Well, who would build a school here?" And I said, "That's the wrong question you should be asking yourself." But the beauty of it is I got to meet with him at, because I do also, as a matter of fact, next week I have a coffee with the cop meeting, which I continue the advocacy and work efforts with them. So that way we continue to have the doors open, like Joanna said. I met up with him in, I think it was September, and I said, I thought, could have been done. Who's wrong, right? And he laughed and chuckled. Yeah, yes, he did. That was a great feeling for myself and for Kim itself, because we showed to them, as being part of the community, hey, if you partner with us, we could create great things. We can improve our community, even if it's like it is. You know, it's, even if it's an effort where, why would you want to build a school here? No, why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we want to like develop within our roots to develop more educational opportunities for our children? There's many children who live in this area. Why take away the education that they deserve? You know, so another one that comes to my mind was Laura Garcia, which she's a field deputy of council member Marquise. So Harris Dawson. So his the advocacy work efforts that I created to meet with her was pretty amazing. I was coming back from lunch, and there was these group of people cleaning the streets. And I had just met with Joanna, interestingly enough, the week prior. And she had shared her vision about the rally, about the cleanup, all the plans that she had for that particular year. And I approached those folks, which were, they were CRCD, is the organization they were working for. And I asked them, hey, I shared the plan. We want to clean up. Who can I speak with to get some support? Because we were planning to buy the materials, right, Joanna? The rakes, all that stuff. And they, she shared some, the supervisor, he was like pulling teeth, because I kept following up. She never returned my calls, never returned my emails. Finally, after so many harassments, she finally said, okay, let me introduce you to, I think it was Angel, and Angel chose me to Laura Garcia, which was the field deputy of that area. It was the best blessing in disguise, because she said, what do you guys need? I got materials, I got rakes, I got bags, all provided. And that led to the successful cleanup event opportunity and academy, which that led to the advocacy work efforts, the rallies. So all these outreach that was created was through having someone in the community reaching out. Now, Mr. Cardenas, the lead officer of the area, he's participated in, we had our trunk or treat. I don't know, some of you guys participated in that event, I believe, trunk or treat in October. He showed up, last minute call, and said, can you show up and help us support? We're going to have about 6 to 1,000 people here. I'll be there. Let me just get approval of overtime. Like, who doesn't want overtime? So he showed up and made it a great success. Let's see, I have, who else can I speak about? Rodolfo Trujillo and Elda Mendez, a lovely couple. They're with United We Stand. They're the ones who came, and they actually gathered volunteers. They got the volunteers to come over and clean the streets for, you know, free, not getting paid, on the weekend, mornings. Great couple. They were so, so ecstatic about hearing that the motel was gone, because that proves to them that although they're just cleaning the streets, their advocacy efforts, their support made such impact in that area. So there was one of the other members that I got introduced to, all these outreach, all this pulling teeth. It's difficult, but it's all worth it, because based on what I hear, the media attention that we're getting does create a lot of opportunities for us to, you know, impact our community, especially in a positive way. That's all I have. Any questions?
I have a comment, Mr. Mendoza. Yeah. I've been an attorney with the Public Defender's Office now for almost 30 years, and one of my first assignments in court was across the street at Metro. And some of my first cases were prostitution cases coming out of the Figueroa corridor. And what we didn't know back then was that the women, mostly women, charged with prostitution were victims of very traumatic childhoods. And what we didn't know back then either is that when that environment exists next to a school, it's actually a feeding ground for recruitment for human trafficking. We know that now. And for decades, I can tell you, because we've dealt with it within my office, I would hear politicians from the city attorney's office, from city council, from the board of supervisors, police department talking about how we're going to crack this down, how we're going to stop this. And it took the love and compassion of a parent and the community to tear it down, literally. And I can't tell you just how much that really means for so many different people. The women who are affected by it, who are out there, hopefully they're getting some support, but it also cuts down into the feeding into that industry. And the way that you did it to break down some of these bureaucratic lines is amazing. And what I wanted to highlight is the partnership between the families and KIT, because I know Joanna, Angela, Belen, all the leadership and the team, Kyle, worked tremendously hard. And I want to say this to all of us, just because this is a big deal. This is a really, really big deal because of the impact that it has on the community long term in breaking down a cycle that has been deeply rooted in a community of color that battles for resources. And the fact that we were able to break this down is something we all of us should be championing, really, beyond just the articles. But Mr. Mendoza, thank you. You've been the champion. I really appreciate this.
And part of all that, we also educated. We partnered up with Volunteers of America, which we educate our parents and our children, because unfortunately, it's sad to say that they even start as young as 10, 12-year-olds to start doing these for children. So, and for that process as well, we also have the education purpose. And someone had mentioned about the lockdowns. Back in August, we had a lockdown and we had our PD. Kids were not back in school yet. Since then, we haven't had one lockdown.
And we were averaging
about two, almost three a month.
Prior to that.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
Wrong way again. Hey, okay. So ways you can get involved or support. You can come and bring a friend to our Kip Adelante in San Diego ribbon cutting, which is on maybe the 27th. Okay, Monday, February 27th. We are finding that our ribbon cuttings are a great way to introduce people to KIP and also to get elected officials and politicians and community members to kind of confirm their support of KIP, which is huge. If you know anyone who might be passionate about the work we're doing in the area on Figueroa, where the motel used to be, who would like to get involved, who would like to help, who would like to be a part of the transformation, we'd love to speak with them. Luis early on introduced us to the city attorney's office, and that partnership was invaluable in making this happen. They literally just reached out to me this week because they wanted a letter of support with something they're doing. I feel like they're my besties now. So Howard Bloom, take note, like you could get there too. And then if there's anyone who's a helpful ally from your contacts based on some of the challenges that we shared, we'd love, you know, to talk to you and connect with them. So we're always here to meet with people, hear your feedback, hear your thoughts. And now I will open it up for any other questions that you might have.
Okay, I really do want to strongly encourage all of us to start going to these events. And the work that Joanna and her team has been amazing. And this goes beyond what we've been talking about. And by that, I mean the politics, right? This goes beyond of the obvious things, which are performance academically in our schools. This really goes to the point of highlighting what important work we're doing. And when folks in the community see all of us out there, it means a lot. And I know that we're all very busy with our families, with our careers, but I really would like to see all of you at more of these events, beyond just sitting at these meetings, because I think you'll draw a lot more than we usually draw from just sitting at these meetings. And as you can see from Mr. Mendoza, our support, not just in word, but in action, goes a very long way. Thank you, Jim.
All right, thanks, guys. Before we move on to this, which Joanna, you will be.
Oh yeah,
this time.
Don't sit down.
I just wanted to thank you, Joanna, and thank you, Mr. Mendoza, for all of your work. A couple of years ago at KIPP SoCal, we started using the term KIPP is community, and I think now we see it in action in a much stronger way than we have in years past. So thank you both for all of your leadership and your efforts within that.
All right, Joanna, you're up again.
Okay, so I think I have a slide.
Yes.
Boom. Okay, so we had an opportunity to apply for one-time funding from the state to support arts and music. As you can see from the summary up here, we have to submit a board-approved plan to the California Department of Education. We put the supporting materials in the board packet. But it's basically something that would just support arts and music programs at all of our schools, with the exception of our newest school, KIPP Generations, since they don't have any kids from the prior year, which is one of the requirements for submission for the grant. So it's one-time funding. We have a singular plan in place, and it would be $5.6 million in funds for arts and music. So would love.
I had a question on that. Yeah. Was it... $5.6 million that had to be spent over what period of time?
Three.
I'm going to forget the exact year, but it's at least 5 years.
We'll easily spend that.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I also don't get too excited because when you break it down.
The state also is probably going to take back a third of the money that was announced in the January budget proposal. So we still need to approve this, but we're probably... minus a third of that number right there is what we'll end up getting.
We'll take what they get.
We'll take what they can get.
So that'd be like $4 million. So that's what the...
Any other questions? Anybody? No? Okay. Do we have a motion to approve the plan for expenditure of arts, music, and instructional material funds?
I submit.
Julie?
No.
Okay. John and Julie, second?
Sure.
Okay. Belen?
Yes. Naeem?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Here.
EJ?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Louise?
Yes.
That's everyone.
Okay, motion passes. All right. Kyle, you're up.
Okay. The first item is we just need to offer an opportunity to discuss and then take a vote to acknowledge receipt and approval of the first interim financial reports. You may recall last meeting we voted on the ones for the schools authorized by LA Unified, and these are reports, same reports, but for the schools authorized by Compton, San Diego Unified, and LA County Office of Education. These reports contain our financial results through October. And then it also provides a budget for the year and a projection for the rest of the year. We'll have later in the year, we'll have second interim reports, and then we do unaudited actual reports. And those are the three main sets of reports we submit to the state each year. Just first three.
Okay. Do I have any questions, board members, as to this motion? Okay. Do we have a motion to acknowledge the receipt of the fiscal year 2022-2023 first interim reports for the above mentioned schools, as well as the opportunity to discuss the reports and financial results with KIPP SoCal management? We have
I'm first.
EJ, first. The second.
Second.
Naeem, second.
Hello. Naeem?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Louise?
Yes.
That's everyone.
Okay, motion passes. Oh.
Okay. The second item is, this is something that we've talked about in prior meetings, but with the point now is we need authorization to move forward with these amendments to our 2020 bonds. So as you recall, we raised money in 2020 for KIPP Promesa Prep for their tenant improvement project. And then the bulk of the bonds that we raised were for the project in Cudahy for KIPP Pueblo Unido. We have about $29 million in bond proceeds that we will no longer be able to use for that project. And we have two options. One is to exercise the extraordinary call provision and repay those bonds before July. But given how attractive the interest rate is on those bonds compared to today's rates, it makes a lot more sense for us to repurpose those proceeds for other projects that we have going on. So there are a few steps we've had to take. We've been working with Bond Council of ORIC, and then Aiken Gump, some attorneys at Aiken Gump have been serving as our counsel throughout these steps. We've completed the TEFRA hearing. We got approval from CSFA's board, and now we're at the spot where we need approval from this board and then eventually from Claire's board to essentially amend a series of loan agreements that are associated with all of our bond offerings, the related intercepts, and then a couple other documents. So what we're looking for now is approval of the resolution that was provided to you in the board packet. And that resolution authorizes a few things. It authorizes the termination of the lease between KIPP Pueblo Unido and Claire 16. It authorizes Claire 15 and Claire 17 to enter into the supplemental master indenture for obligation number 7. And that's going to allow us to use these bond proceeds for Claire 15 and Claire 17 projects. It authorizes us to amend the loan agreement associated with the 2020 bond offering between Claire and CSFA. That amendment simply is to substitute these two new projects in, you know, to be able to use the proceeds for these two projects. Authorizes us to amend all the leases between Claire or the LLCs under Claire and our schools. And then finally, it allows us to amend the intercepts for each of these bond series so that we could reallocate the payments for the debt service among the schools. So happy to take any good questions.
You do have a question. Just in terms of the $29 million, so the two projects you mentioned, will that use up all the $29 million? Or
yes.
Okay. Yeah. And what's the timing roughly on that?
Well, about half of it will go to the KIPP Scholar project, which should be done sometime between end of summer and early fall. So that'll use about half under that time frame. And then the other half will be used for KIPP Ignite. And that should start within the next couple of weeks. So that would go from drawing the next couple of weeks through like spring, summer of 24. So over the next year and a half, it should all be spent down.
Thanks. And then my other question was just on the loan amendment. Were there any material changes that
impacted? No, the loan amendment? No, it literally is substituting the KIPP Pueblo Unido project taking that one out and in its place putting KIPP Scholars project and KIPP Ignite's projects. So that's the only, it's amending the projects. And then the lease amendments are, we're taking this as an opportunity to reshuffle some of the, basically the allocation of the debt service among our schools. And so that's what all the lease amendments are for.
Thank you. Any other questions?
No.
All right. Okay, do we have a motion to approve the termination of lease between Claire 16 LLC and KIPP SoCal and approve all amendments and new agreements required to reallocate the 2020 bond proceeds to be used for projects for KIPP Scholar Academy, KIPP Ignite Academy, and KIPP Comienza Community Prep?
I motion to approve.
DJ first, is there a second?
Second, Mel.
Okay, Mel, second. Bella?
Naeem?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Julie?
Yep.
Luis?
Yes.
Is that right?
Motion passes. Okay, so we're going to turn it over to Cecily, who's going to give us an overview with regards to our family complaint policy. Cecily.
So I apologize, this isn't as exciting as the other wonderful presentations. That is very important. We wanted to, this was board approved June 20th, 2019, after reviewed by LAUSD that required a number of changes to be made in terms of like the timeline for complaints to be resolved, the stakeholders who were involved. We followed all their procedure that they asked us to do and revised it back then. So I wanted to do, we wanted to do a review so that, members that were familiar with it can get re-familiarized with the policy because the board can be involved in this process if it gets to that point later in the process, as well as for our newer members that may not be familiar with the process. So I'm going to go through the whole thing because it's important that you understand each step correlates to the next step and that you understand the reason behind it. So if you have any comments, concerns, complaints during the process, please stop me because I know how it is when you get to a point, you want to ask it right then and there. So it is a 7-step process. So feel free to stop me anytime. Okay, so the following procedure outlines the steps to be used by a parent, a guardian, or community member. That's important. It's not just our families, it's community members. Because we obviously keep this community, so we take the feedback of our community. It's just as important. So who has a suggestion, a question, comment, concern, or complaint about a KIPP SoCal school policy, a team member, or a particular situation that's going on? KIPP SoCal public schools encourage families and team members to resolve problems collaboratively and respectfully. Teamwork, respect, and prompt resolution of conflicts are very important to KIPP SoCal public schools. I can't say that stronger than that because when you see this process, you're gonna say, okay, there's a lot of steps, but we never had to get to those later steps because we generally resolve complaints. I would say sometimes it can be resolved within a couple of days. Sometimes it may take, a little bit more, maybe a couple weeks, but it's never taking as long as the process allows for. A resolution of questions, concerns, and complaints should always start with the individual team member or specific KIPP SoCal school in concern, because we obviously want to start on the ground at the school and try to resolve it there before we actually go up to our KIPP SoCal leadership team. If the question, concern, or complaint is unresolved, it is essential that the school leader is included in the resolution process. Okay, step one. Contact the specific teacher, team member, or school administrator involved. Request to discuss over the phone or have a face-to-face conference at a time that is mutually agreeable. Remember that such meetings should not interfere with the teacher's instructional time, nor interrupt the daily activities or schedule at the school. Usually, I have seen where, team members and admin teams bend over backwards, even if it does mean, some disruption, but they want to try to resolve it. That's what we want to focus on without too much disruption. But we understand that if there's a complaint or concern, we can't fully educate it without getting that resolved. So that's why it's so important. Step two, if the concern or complaint is not resolved in step one, the individual raising the concern or complaint may contact the school leader.
Be prepared to give specific details about the concern or complaint and steps that have already been taken to resolve the problem. The school leader, assistant school leader, school manager, and other members of school leadership will collaborate with the individual raising the concern or complaint to resolve the identified issue. School leadership shall consider all the facts and find an appropriate resolution of the concern or complaint. Steps one and two will occur in less than 30 days. We've allowed for that timeline. This is what LAUSD asked us to do. But we generally, as I said, resolve them well before, usually within a two-week margin of time. Step three, if the individual raising the concern or complaint is dissatisfied with the school leadership's decision, he or she may contact KIPP SoCal Public Schools Chief Academic Officer. Some more over there. The Chief Academic Officer will collaborate with the individual raising the concern or complaint to resolve the identified issue. The Chief Academic Officer shall consider all the facts and find an appropriate resolution of the concern or complaint. Step four, if the concern or complaint is not resolved in step three, KIPP SoCal Public Schools leadership team will meet to decide who on the leadership team will be best suited to handle this particular issue and set of circumstances. We thought this was a very important change when we added this because every member of the leadership team has a different niche and every circumstance is not the same. So we understand that certain people on a leadership team may be more equipped to handle that complaint or concern a little bit more quickly under their skill set. This leadership team member will collaborate with the individual raising the concern or complaint to resolve the identified issue. This leadership team member shall consider all the facts and find an appropriate resolution of the concern or complaint. Steps three and four will occur in less than 30 days. Step five, if the individual raising a concern or complaint is dissatisfied with KIPP SoCal Public Schools leadership team's decision, he or she may contact KIPP SoCal Public Schools Chief Executive Officer, which is obviously Ms. Martinez. The Chief Executive Officer will collaborate with the individual raising the concern or complaint to resolve the identified issue. The Chief Executive Officer shall consider all the facts and find an appropriate resolution of the concern or complaint. Step six, if the individual raising a concern or complaint is dissatisfied with the Chief Executive Director's decision, the individual may petition the KIPP SoCal Board of Directors. If the board receives a complaint prior to completion of steps one through five, it will inform the Chief Executive Officer and provide him or her with the relevant information. Similarly, the concern or complaint could be brought before a board meeting. KIPP SoCal Public Schools welcomes the participation of parents, guardians, and community members at board meetings. Public comment is a standard component of the agenda of every board meeting, which is designed for members of the audience to speak. However, due to public meeting laws, the board can only listen, not respond or take action. These presentations are limited to 3 minutes. If a parent, guardian, or community member should bring an item to the board in written form or via public comment at a meeting, the board chair will determine if the item should be discussed at an upcoming board meeting, discussed by the governance committee, followed up by the chief executive officer with the school leader or another school support team member, or followed up by the chief academic officer with the school leader. If the item is to be discussed at the next board meeting or governance committee meeting, it will be placed on the agenda and appropriately noticed. For those issues directed to the governance committee, it will consider all the facts and circumstances and discuss with relevant KIPP SoCal team members and, if necessary, with the individual raising the concern or complaint by phone or in person. The committee shall attempt to resolve the matter at the next committee meeting and shall send the individual raising the concern or complaint written confirmation of the resolution. A KIPP SoCal team member will be appointed to follow up with the individual or individuals regarding grievances after being discussed with the broader board or committee of the board. Follow-up is generally by phone or within 48 hours after a decision is made by the board or the board committee. If the item is to be addressed by the chief executive officer or chief academic officer or school leader, a KIPP SoCal team member will follow up within 48 hours after a decision is made. The KIPP SoCal team member will also follow up with the board. Steps 5 and 6 will occur in less than 30 days. Step 7, if a decision is made by a committee rather than the full board and the individual raising the concern or complaint is dissatisfied with the committee's decision, the individual raising may petition the board in writing within 30 days of the committee's written resolution described in step 6. The board shall review the concern or complaint and send written confirmation of the resolution to the individual raising the concern or complaint prior to the next board meeting. The board meeting's decision shall be final. So as I said, usually is resolved within steps 1 through 4. Since I've been here, KIPP SoCal, I've never actually gone to the board because we're really good about trying to get it resolved within, like I said, that 2-week period before it would even get to this point. So if there's any questions, comments, concerns, or complaints about policy, please let me know.
It's extensive.
I mean, we wanted to make sure that, you know, if they're not satisfied, they have like an appeals process to go. That's what, you know, it's basically framed as an appeals process. If you're not happy with the decision, then here's the next step. Then here's the next step. But obviously you guys may have the final decision.
Any questions? Comments?
So where is the, how is this communicated to like our parents, for example?
Very good question. It is in our family handbook, every school's family handbook every year. And also schools are trained that if they're, and that's one thing I wanted to explain. So yes, we have this policy, but we also have the uniform complaint procedures policy, which is a federally mandated policy, a federal and California state mandated process that is limited to basically federally protected items. Like for instance, our, which we now call our expanded learning program, the government says after school program, that's federally and state funded. So that's protected under that policy. So the, everything that's not, you know, federally protected, like Title IX, you know, any kind of discrimination type of, you know, anything like that, it falls under this policy. So both policies are put in the family handbook every year. And schools are trained that if a parent or a community member or guardian has a complaint, they're directed to the policy in terms of like our general policy. And then if it's, like I said, if it's, you know, any federally protected right, it goes to our uniform complaint procedures process. So
just one quick reminder, some of you at times may have gotten emails from parents was concerned about their children. When you do, please forward them to Cecily and Angela and Belen so we can address it immediately.
Yes, yes, definitely.
That's amazing. Having your KIPP email address forwarded to whatever you can address.
Well, yes,
correct. Yes. Yes. And if you need to support with that, let me know.
No, thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, this quick, I think you've heard about this twice already, so just wanted to it's definitely a delayed ribbon cutting ceremony. Adelante opened their doors at the start of 2020, and then we know what ensued. So we're excited to celebrate their beautiful new space and buildings and invite you all to join us. And it's not listed on here, but of course, always have an open invitation to visit any of our schools. And if that's an opportunity, as Joe was saying, to bring little friends or introduce others, we always love having visitors at our schools.
That'll be a nice train wreck down San Diego.
Did they bring the train back?
I think they opened it. Yeah.
It was very, very upset when I heard they were in that train. So peaceful.
All right. We're going to be going into closed session now in the room right behind John and Kavika. So all board members and essential team members, please join us.
All right. Have everybody's attention. The board. Quickly, we'll be done. Thank you. There was no board action in closed session related to any existing litigation. So, with no further business to discuss, the meeting is adjourned at 3:12 p.m. And look forward to seeing everybody next month on the 30th. Thank you.
I don't know how you two did it, but that's amazing.